Chaussin. That's at 2 o'clock this afternoon. This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's now 1 o'clock, time for the news read by John Shea.
3 days before the government announces its spending review, the Chancellor, George Osborne, has insisted that cuts are needed to restore credibility to the public finances. He said the country had been on the brink of bankruptcy when Labour left office. Mr Osborne also announced measures to tackle benefit fraud, saying people who made unreasonable mistakes on claim forms would face a £50 fine. Those who misclaimed three times would have their payments suspended for 3 years. The Shadow Chancellor, Alan Johnson, said the government should cut less and tax the banks more. Football's governing body, FIFA, is investigating claims that two of its officials offered to sell their votes in the ballot that decides who hosts the World Cup in 2018 and 2022. The Sunday Times said Amos Adamu of Nigeria and Reynald Temari of Tahiti told undercover reporters they would accept money for projects in their regions. Both have since said their votes can't be influenced. The charity Save the Children has said one of its workers who's been kidnapped in Somalia is well and in good spirits. The British worker was taken near the border with Ethiopia on Thursday. Save the Children said it was still extremely concerned and called on the man's captors to release him. 25 people were injured, two of them seriously, when a car was driven at a crowd of people outside a nightclub in Rochdale early this morning. Police said the club's doormen may have been the targets. No one's been arrested. At least 10 people have been killed in a crush at a Hindu festival in the northeastern Indian state of Bihar. At least 20,000 worshippers had gathered at the temple. A district official said the crush started after rumours that part of the temple had collapsed. The mathematician Benoit Mandelbrot has died aged 85 in the United States. His work in the 1970s led to a new branch of geometry known as fractals. He held French and US citizenship, but was born into a Jewish family in Poland before moving to Paris aged 11 to escape the Nazis. And the weather. It should stay bright and dry for most of the UK today. Temperatures will range from 12 to 14 degrees Celsius with some breeze. The news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at 1:02.
And it was read by John Shea. Well, now, here on Radio 3, today's early music show. Alessandro Scarlatti was born 350 years ago. And today's early music show celebrates his anniversary with a look back at the music the composer helped put on for a very special guest. Here's Catherine Bott.
Hello. In today's programme, music to set before a king. The year, 1702, the place, Naples, and the king in question, the 19-year-old Philip V of Spain, who'd come from his native France for a month and required the finest musicians to dance attendance on him. Musicians like Arcangelo Corelli and Alessandro Scarlatti.
Is gravis.
Love, why have you become so harsh when I only ask for kindness? The aria Cur queso crudelis from Alessandro Scarlatti's amateur motet Infirmata Vulnerata, sung by David Daniels with the Arcadian Academy, directed by Nicholas McGeegan. Scarlatti wrote that in Naples in 1702, when he was 42 years old and just about to embark on a sabbatical. Or so he thought. After 18 years in the city, he had itchy feet and not nearly enough money to show for his service to the royal court there. He'd been lured from Rome by the promise of wonderful musical opportunities, particularly in the opera house. But he had a family to raise, and he was fed up with the quaint Neapolitan custom of paying as late as possible. So when he was granted leave of absence for 10 months, he started packing his bags for Florence and Rome. With him would go his 15-year-old son, Domenico, already a prodigy, already appointed organist and composer to the royal chapel. But before they could set out, the whole venture was cancelled. The new King of Spain was on his way, with a mission to put a lid on the simmering discontent which had followed the suppression of the anti-Spanish conspiracy initiated by Gaetano, Prince of Macchia. Just to put that into context, Naples, nowadays Italy's fourth city after Rome, Milan and Turin, Naples, the home of pizza. Well, 1702 was the 199th year of its being ruled by Spain. This regime had only a few more years to run, in fact, but no one could foresee that, as court and chapel alike scurried round preparing for the young king's arrival. More about him later, but first, a sonata by a violin virtuoso summoned from Rome to divert the royal party, Arcangelo Corelli. London Baroque with Corelli's Trio Sonata Opus 4 No. 1, dedicated to that most musical cleric, Cardinal Ottoboni. It was to the Cardinal that the Viceroy in Naples applied for Corelli's services. This meant that the two greatest Italian composers of their generation, Corelli and Scarlatti, would be reunited. Their paths had probably crossed before, in Rome, at the weekly concerts which Corelli mounted under Ottoboni's patronage, and at different times the two men had also worked for Queen Christina of Sweden. If Scarlatti had achieved his aim of getting himself back to Rome with his son Domenico, he would have been sure of a warm welcome from Ottoboni, who had previously enabled him to stage two of his many operas there. Instead, it was Corelli packing his bags for a journey south. Guitarist Gerardo Arriaga playing Folias Italianas by Santiago de Murcia, King Philip's court guitarist. Time now to address the baroque complexities of European royalty. I should be calling Philip V of Spain by his Spanish name, Felipe, but he was really more of a Philippe, born at Versailles, the second son of the Grand Dauphin of France and better known as the Duc d'Anjou until he succeeded to the Spanish throne, the first member of the Bourbon dynasty to rule Spain. 300 years later, King Juan Carlos of Spain is a Bourbon too. How did Philip get to be King of Spain? Well, to simplify it into the tiniest of nutshells, because King Charles II of Spain died childless in 1700 and named him as his heir. He was the grandson of Charles's sister, after all. No sooner had he become king at 17 than he was married off to the 13-year-old Princess Maria Luisa of Savoy, thus cementing the Treaty of Turin. This was a happy choice. She was bright and attractive, and just a year later made a successful regent on Philip's behalf while he visited Naples. He was distraught when she died in 1714, a month after he'd abdicated the throne in favour of his son, Luis. But Luis himself died of smallpox within 6 months, so his father resumed the throne. His reign of 45 years remains the longest in Spanish history. The reasons for that brief abdication are unclear, but Philip was of a deeply melancholic temperament, his depressions soothed and lifted by music. Later in his life, he was greatly comforted by the singing of the castrato Farinelli. But now let's take him back to 1702 in Naples. The young king is only 19, has only been speaking Spanish for about 18 months, and here he is in one of the most important cities in the civilized world, required to assert his majesty and might to show the Neapolitans that he means business. It doesn't seem to happen so often nowadays, sadly, but throughout the period covered by the early music show, displays of high culture were part of the panoply of kingship. So on the evening of May the 1st, 1702, there was a most lovely serenata, followed at nightfall with a new fireworks display, arranged especially by the Viceroy.
Thank you.
Fabio Biondi directing Europa Galante in that sinfonia from the serenata Clori, Dorino e Amore, composed by Alessandro Scarlatti. And we can be pretty sure that this was the most lovely serenata I referred to earlier. On the score are the words, sung at Naples before Philip V, King of Spain. So far, so good, and the musical delights kept coming. The king was also offered a private opera performance. Private, because there was a danger of an assassination attempt if he went to a public opera house. Mind you, I'm not sure how secure he was in his specially built room of wood from which His Majesty could easily see and be seen. Oh well, chamber music anyway was much safer, and Corelli had arrived in Naples. I've already said that Scarlatti was put out at having his trip cancelled because of this royal visit, and Corelli was apparently even crosser. Here's Charles Burney's account of the visit. At the time that Corelli enjoyed his highest reputation, his fame having reached the court of Naples, he was invited by order of His Majesty to that capital. With some reluctance, he was prevailed upon to accept. But lest he should not be well accompanied, he took with him his own second violin and violoncello. His astonishment was very great to find that the Neapolitan band executed his concertos almost as accurately at sight as his own band after repeated rehearsals, when they'd almost got them by heart.
Thank you.
Corelli's Concerto Grosso, Opus 6, Number 1. Once again, Fabio Biondi and Europa Galante. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott. So, a tricky moment over, as grumpy Corelli found himself unexpectedly impressed by Neapolitan musical high standards. Now it was the young king's turn to be grumpy. After all, he was from Paris, where they didn't reckon much to Italian music compared with homegrown output. And anyway, he'd come to Naples to overawe his people, not to enjoy himself. In anticipation of Corelli's performance, he's reported to have ordered that all those knights who were present in his apartments should enter. When they told the king that it was not known how much said knights enjoyed music, His Majesty said in reply that if they didn't enjoy music, they would perhaps enjoy the fact of being in his presence. It doesn't sound as if the king much enjoyed the fact of being in Corelli's presence. During a performance of a violin sonata, according to Burney, the king found one of the adagios so long and dry that, being tired, he quitted the room, to the great mortification of Corelli.
Thank you.
Andrew Manzi and Richard Egar with part of Corelli's Violin Sonata, Opus 5, No. 5. Musical anecdotes often gain rather a lot in repeated telling, and Charles Burney wasn't actually present to see the King walking out on Corelli. He got the story at second hand. The truth of this musical encounter is probably a bit more subtle. In taking a couple of long-standing colleagues to Naples, Corelli wasn't expressing his doubts about the competence of the local talent, just doing what any self-respecting musician still does, if possible, surrounding himself with some familiar friends as he faced a rather daunting occasion by royal command. And the young king, although perhaps not deeply musical, would certainly have heard some of Corelli's music already and may have been keen to have more of it. Maybe he really was just tired, but that's not such a good story. Let's hope that Corelli was not too offended to relish the talents of Scarlatti Jr., who may well have been his harpsichord player for that ill-fated sonata performance. Richard Lester playing Domenico Scarlatti's Exercise in B minor, K27. Sadly for Corelli, that regal walkout was not the last of his humiliations. Things were about to go from bad to worse. Back to Charles Burney again, with a tale to chill the blood of the most seasoned professional. Afterwards, he was desired to lead in the performance of a masque composed by Scarlatti. From Scarlatti's little knowledge of the violin, the part was somewhat awkward and difficult. Corelli was not able to execute it, but he was astonished beyond measure to hear Petrillo, the Neapolitan leader, and the other violins perform that which had baffled his skill. A song succeeded this in C minor, which Corelli led off in C major. "Let's start again," said Scarlatti good-naturedly. Still, Corelli persisted in the major key, till Scarlatti was obliged to call him out and set him right. So mortified was poor Corelli with this disgrace and the general bad figure he imagined he had made at Naples, that he stole back to Rome in silence. Ouch! Having sight-read Scarlatti's scrawl myself in my time, I've got a lot of sympathy for Corelli. The king's reaction to this is not recorded. Il Seminario Musicale, in part of Alessandro Scarlatti's motet about souls in purgatory, De Tenebroso Lacu, rather appropriate for Corelli as he slunk back home. The singer was Gérard Laine. So what was the outcome of the royal visit? Well, apart from producing some terrific music, it was a bit of a failure. After a month or so, Philip left Naples, probably feeling that he'd had rather a wasted journey, politically speaking. His encounter with the two greatest Italian composers of their generation had been wasted on him too. Corelli probably took a while to get over the whole experience. Scarlatti was finally granted his 10 months' leave and set off with his family to Florence, where he wasn't offered the prestigious appointment he craved. He decided to head for Rome to resume his career as an opera composer. Big mistake. He eventually lost his job in Naples. Perhaps he should have responded to urgent entreaties from the viceroy to come home. And the new pope, Clement XI, didn't allow opera in Rome. Scarlatti had to settle for a modest position as assistant to the maestro di cappella at the Congregazione del Oratorio di San Filippo Neri.
Catherine Bott there, and that ends today's Early Music Show. It was produced in Manchester by Sam Phillips. The programme was first broadcast in May. Well, next Saturday, Lucy Skeeping presents the Early Music Show live from this year's Brighton Early Music Festival. That's just after the 1 o'clock news next Saturday, here on BBC Radio 3.
It was an experimental novel in a box, 27 unbound chapters to be read in any order. For this weekend's Radio 3 Drama on 3, this influential work by B.S. Johnson has been adapted for radio.
This room, I recognise instantly. Tony, June, Wendy and I sat here, yes.
Martin Freeman stars as a sports writer haunted by memories of a dear friend.
Why should that seem remarkable? It was only a few years ago. The memory's not that bad.
A touching story illustrating the depths of loss and the random nature of memory.
I'm over-dramatising this. His death, this place, these occasions. Still.
The Unfortunates. Radio 3's Drama on 3. Tonight at 8 o'clock.
BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's 2 o'clock and here's Chichi Nwanuku with a couple of hours of your Radio 3 requests.
Hello. It's a sure sign of approval and respect when one great composer transcribes the work of another in order to perform it himself, which is exactly what happened with our opening piece, Liszt's piano version of Beethoven's Eighth Symphony. Mr. B.D. McKee emailed saying it would make an ideal and interesting change on a Sunday afternoon. Thank you. Who said Beethoven didn't have a sense of humour? I love that playful chasing around between the parts there. And if you know the orchestral version, it's particularly good fun for the double basses. That was Liszt's transcription of the Allegretto Scherzando movement from Beethoven's Eighth Symphony, played there by Alain Planez. Next, I had an email a while back from Nick Drew saying, I'm part of a group that is filling in at Bath Abbey for the regular Abbey Choir during the summer holidays, and this is one of the pieces we'll be performing. I love the cinematic quality of it, which is appropriate given that he's mainly known for film and TV scores. Nick's asked for the atmospheric Viri Galilei by Patrick Gowers.